The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
So, who is this Hildegard? Hildegard lived from 1098 to 1179, during the period called the Dark Ages, 400 years before Galileo discovered the basic scientific facts of our Earth's physical existence in the universe. She was a Benedictine abbess who founded her second abbey at Bingen on the Rhine River. The nuns at her first convent in Disibodenburg had elected her at the age of 39 to be their leader as Magistra, Mother Superior. She was an incredibly gifted woman, a polymath, meaning a person of great abilities who achieves excellence in several areas of knowledge. She authored numerous literary and religious works. She was an herbalist, medical practitioner, naturalist, philosopher, theologian, and mystic, and finally recorded the strange, religiously inspired visions she had experienced throughout her life. In fact, in Germany, Hildegard von Bingen is considered the founder of scientific natural history. Recently, scholars have been re-examining everything Hildegard wrote, her personality, her vast quantity of work, and her influence in many specialties. And as we have heard today, perhaps her most profound talent was in the composition of sacred music. Hildegard, as shown in her writings and the historical records of her social interactions, was a liberated, outspoken, and forceful religious woman. About 400 of her letters survive, letters to humble folk who asked her for cures for infertility, for example, and letters to her superiors, popes, and kings on religious and governance matters. Her writing reveals an unusual range of attitudes, from seeking or giving advice on religious things to being cleverly self-serving or even audacious. For example, here is an excerpt from a letter she wrote in 1153 to King Frederick, soon to become Emperor Barbarossa of the Holy Roman Empire. Quote, "In a mystic vision, I see you like a little boy or some madman. Beware, therefore, that the Almighty King does not lay you low because of the blindness of your eyes, which fail to see correctly how to hold the rod of proper governance in your hand. See to it that you do not act in such a way that you lose the grace of God." Unquote. This effort could have gone badly for Hildegard, as she was living under the secular rule of Frederick. But the king invited her to his court to make prophecies, and later wrote to let her know that they had all come true.
This reflection addresses Hildegard of Bingen in relation to illness and healing. Hildegard of Bingen medicine and the medicine of her time was practiced within a monastic community, and her reputation for her expertise in medicine was established not in her lifetime, but after her death. It was documented that she was familiar with scientific and medical theory as well as secular healing practices. Hildegard's approach to disease treatment was with a blend of practical wisdom, spiritual insight, and herbal remedies. Excuse me. She used herbs and plants extensively for healing. She believed that God provided these natural substances for the well-being of humanity. Some of the herbs she used included fennel, lavender, sage, and chamomile. They were used in various forms, such as teas, tinctures, and poultices. She emphasized the interconnectedness of the body, mind, and spirit through practices of holistic healing, and believed that physical ailments often had spiritual or emotional roots. Her treatments aimed to address both the physical symptoms and the underlying spiritual disharmony. She also incorporated precious stones into her healing practices. For instance, she used emeralds for its supposed ability to balance emotions and promote overall well-being. Regarding her approach to diet and lifestyle, she advocated for a balanced diet and moderation in all things. She believed that food played a crucial role in maintaining health and encouraged fasting, consuming fresh foods, and avoiding excesses. Hildegard composed music that she believed had healing properties. She saw music and vibration as a way to restore balance and harmony within the body. Her holistic approach also included prayer, meditation, and spiritual practices that aligned oneself with divine energy and facilitated healing. Hildegard elaborated on the medical and scientific relationship between the human microcosm and the macrocosm of the universe, focusing on the interrelated patterns of the four elements, that being fire, air, water, and earth, of the four seasons, of the four zones of earth, polar, temperate, dry, and tropical, and of the four major winds, that being the eastern taking in the air, western air winds mixing with clouds, southern fire, and the northern winds holds the frost outside. The healing philosophy of Hildegard is addressed in a book titled Slow Medicine, written by Victoria Slow, a geriatrician who worked at Laguna Honda Hospital while completing her master's and her PhD work on Hildegard of Bingham medicine and philosophy. She opened the Echo Medicine Project at Laguna Honda on a long-term care unit, embracing Hildegard's philosophy of the body as a garden and the healing power of nature and the importance of healing through touch versus the flawed American healthcare approach with its algorithms, requirements, regulations, and mandates. She wrote about this in a book titled God's Hotel, which we have in the book corner here in the King Room. Followers and students of Hildegard have stated, technologies are not the enemy. We can use them while incorporating simple, natural practices derived from ancient techniques and natural substances without demonizing modern medicine or romanticizing past practices. So it's a little treat. I put on the table in the back a recipe by Hildegard for antidepressant cookies.
I have been a literal tree hugger. I've written odes to leaves. And at one time, when I used to be able to get my children to school and then head to Golden Gate Park for some trail running, I thought that my objectives were exercise and health, but even more vital, I soon discovered, was the rejuvenation of spirit that came from frequent immersion in a green and growing environment. These are some of the reasons that I resonate with Hildegard's concept of viriditas, a Latin word that translates literally to something like greening, with connotations of freshness and vitality. She wasn't the first writer to use the term in a theologic context, but it was never in common usage, whereas it appears repeatedly in Hildegard's works, whether they're spiritual, poetic, botanical, medicinal. Her viriditas arises in many contexts. It is what drives plants to grow and flourish, that which brings health of both body and soul to humans, the creative force which underlies the existence and history of the world. Hildegard's work as a gardener may have contributed to her attraction to the word. Like Dolores, she was just 8 years old when she left home for a religious education. In the care of her older cousin, Jutta, her first teacher and mentor throughout her youth, among her earliest lessons were in identifying, caring for, and making curative use of plants. One of the essential functions of a monastery was to be a place of refuge and healing, not only for the residents, but for others from the surrounding area. While Hildegard lived between stone walls, she nonetheless remained part of and inspired by the verdant world, by Viriditas. And metaphor and imagery came naturally to her. Jutta was revered as a mystic, and so would Hildegard be once she dared reveal to others the visions she had experienced since earliest childhood. Strange and vivid scenes observed not, she explained, with her outer physical eyes, but with the eyes of her soul. Her first book recorded 26 of them, both in words and paintings. They were framed in a medieval Christian account of the human relationship to the divine. And some of the images you've seen are from that book. For me, Hildegard's use of viriditas can shimmer with a mystic ecstasy. It occurs again in the next song, and I hope this recent translation, as well as the music, may move you as well. Most noble evergreen, with your roots in the sun, you shine in the cloudless sky of a sphere no earthly eminence can grasp, enfolded in the clasp of ministries divine. You blush like the dawn, you burn like a flame of the sun.
When I moved to San Francisco in 2006, the first singing work I was offered was with San Francisco Renaissance Voices, which led to a performance of Hildegard's Ordo Virtutum, a sacred music drama for 18 solo female voices comprising of the soul and 17 virtues. The last solo role, the devil, is a male voice, but he is not allowed to sing. He only yells or grunts, as according to Hildegard, the devil cannot produce divine harmony. I love this idea so much. That's theology that resounds with me. This was my first introduction to Hildegard's music and her life. Hildegard was never classically trained in composition. She was self-taught, although not in a way that many people would expect. Her whole life, Hildegard claimed to be both clairvoyant, able to see the future, and clairaudient, able to hear extraordinary voices, which spoke of the future. The music came to her in trances, and that is how she was able to compose without any formal training. In addition to Ordo Virtutum, Hildegard composed over 70 liturgical pieces, one of the largest repertoire among medieval composers. Initially hesitant to speak of the voices and music she heard, it is amazing to think that everything her legacy is built upon, her writings and music, were not written down until after receiving a vision to do so at the age of 42. Hildegard has since been referenced the patron saint of late bloomers. Thank you, Mark Sumner, for that little detail. Hildegard believed that music had a direct correlation with an enhanced spiritual state. Music was used as a way to enlighten, bring joy and positivity to the soul. It was a type of meditation which produced relaxation. The manner in which this was practiced highly resembles the way Buddhist meditation techniques are performed. Up until the end of his life in 2015, the neurologist Oliver Sacks was researching Hildegard's 12th century belief that music can bring a whole brain connection between the two hemispheres to heal and calm the body. Hildegard's music and words are extraordinary, and I know you've heard that word over and over today, but truly she is extraordinary for any composer in any time. But she inspires me because she was a woman living in a time when few composers, much less women, were given credit for their work. And yet, we know who she was today. That's amazing. Her life was devoted to service and her faith, and that is reflected in her music and words. The final verses of Ordu Virtutum ask the audience to bend their knees so that God may stretch out his hand to you. The final word, porigat, which means stretch out, is set to 39 notes, the longest melisma in the play. It is meant to illustrate the stretch of a divine hand toward humanity. And again, that's theology that I can get behind.
I first learned about Hildegard of Bingen when I was a college student in the 1970s, but I didn't meet her in a class. Instead, I became acquainted with Hildegard as part of Judy Chicago's 1979 art installation, The Dinner Party, at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. This ambitious, groundbreaking work included exquisite table settings for 39 women in history. Chicago and her team created an elaborate triangular table. Each of the three wings of the table featured uniquely designed place settings for 13 women. The first was the primordial goddess. The last was Georgia O'Keeffe. Hildegard's place setting is based on the structure of a Gothic cathedral, and her plate is painted as a rose window, the central stained glass window in any cathedral, often considered the spiritual center of the church. I will forever associate Hildegard primarily with the beauty of women's creativity and spirituality. Hildegard has captured the imagination of so many scholars, painters, poets, playwrights, novelists, filmmakers, and musicians. This morning we've heard a sampling of her glorious sacred music. As a writer, public speaker, and poet, Hildegard transcended bands and barriers to women expressing ideas publicly. And as we've heard, she was particularly prolific in the second half of her long life. At 42, she began work on a book of theology, Scivias, which prompted close scrutiny by the Pope. Hildegard frequently compared herself to a feather, which floats on the air not because of any power of its own, but because it's upheld by a power outside itself. This assertion she made of receiving a divine command to write convinced the Pope to approve and sanction her work, solidifying her place as a seer and a prophet within the Catholic Church. In addition to hundreds of letters and sacred texts with music, Hildegard eventually wrote three books on theology, two books on medicine and herbology, and in the 1160s, she traveled throughout Germany, preaching both in monasteries and in public settings to denounce clerical corruption and call for widespread reform. Dare we call her an activist? When Dolores invited me to participate in today's service, I turned to Jane Hirschfield's beautiful 1994 anthology, Women in Praise of the Sacred, 43 Centuries of Spiritual Poetry by Women. And I was reminded immediately of the legacy and connection that Hildegard has on contemplative poetry, even in our time. Like Hildegard, we poets in the 21st century aim to deepen our wisdom, revere nature, and do all we can to nourish humanity and peace in a complex world. It's something that is everywhere in Hildegard's work. I'd like to end with her poem, O Ignis Spiritus Paracliti, which speaks across the centuries of the spirit or the life force within us all. O fire of the spirit and defender, the life of every life created, holy are you, giving life to every form. Holy are you, anointing the critically broken. Holy are you, cleansing the festering wounds. O breath of holiness, O fire of love, O taste so sweet within the breast that floods the heart with virtue's fragrant good. O clearest fountain, in which is seen the mirrored work of God, to gather the estranged and seek again the lost. O mighty course that runs within and through the all, up in the heights, upon the earth, and in the every depth, you bind and gather all together. From you the clouds flow forth, the wind takes flight, the stones their moisture hold, the waters, rivers spring, and earth viridity exudes. You are the teacher of the truly learned, whose joy you grant through wisdom's inspiration. And so may you be praised, who are the sound of praise, the joy of life, the hope and potent honor, and the giver of the gifts of light.
Thank you, that was very moving. Here are some closing thoughts. I hope you enjoyed hearing about this extraordinary woman and all the ways she mothered the world, doing what mothers do, even in her unconventional role and ways, challenging, prodding, nurturing those around her, and trying to hold the world accountable for being better and wiser. And I especially hope we were reminded of our calling to bring our gifts to the world unapologetically, as Hildegard did, with aplomb and gutsiness at a time when it was quite difficult for a woman to do so. In conclusion, Hildegard, like us, lived in a perilous time of ongoing power struggles, often spilling into warfare, as we see every day. During her era, there were conflicts among secular rulers, between secular and religious authorities, between the European Crusaders and the Islamic forces which claimed much of the Middle East, and even within the church itself. Hers was a time of instability. So, therefore, it seems appropriate now to end our service with words that express her hopes and ours for our world. Dona Nobis Pacem, give us peace. We will sing it first in monophony and then layer it over and upon itself in a round. Mark will instruct us. Please rise in body and spirit as our singers lead us in hymn number 388.